Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Coverage of Haiti has fallen off fast, faster than I expected, but the misery continues 3 weeks after the worst quake in more than 200 years flattened almost every building in the country, including schools, orphanages, and hospitals. Next week, Columbus mental health counselor and translator Randy Cohen will travel to the Dominican Republic's border with Haiti to work with the folks of the International Medical Alliance. Randy is with us in the studio to talk about her work with the Alliance today. Also in the studio, or not in the studio, also in Haiti, calling from Haiti, Dorothy Davison. She's the executive director of the International Medical Alliance. Dorothy, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you. And it's good to be with you.
And from California, Dr. Lee Kagan. He's an internal medicine physician, and he is you just returned from Haiti, and you're headed back there. Is it next week, Dr. Kagan?
Yeah, we got back this last Saturday night, and my wife and I go back on the 13th.
And, of course, Randy, right here in the studio, Randy Cohen, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Now, you're headed there next week, right, Randy?
I am. I'm going to meet up with Lee, Dr. Kagan, and his wife, Patty, and we'll meet Dorothy at the airport. Hi, Dorothy.
Hello.
Dorothy, why don't you tell us about the International Medical Alliance, how it was founded and what it does?
Okay. We were founded in the year 2000. We had done relief work for a number of years with other groups, but we saw a need for devoting an emphasis toward chronic care so that the patient received an annual supply of blood pressure medication, diabetic medication, with follow-up, and so that our teams returned to the same cities and villages year after year so there was continuity of care.
And how has it evolved?
Well, we thought that there was no place domestically for us, that we'd always be international. And then on August the 29th, 2005, Katrina. And so we spent 4 years on the Gulf Coast, the first few months in Mississippi. And then after that, we answered the City of New Orleans' call to administer a clinic in New Orleans East. And we worked there 3 years, thanks to grants from Salvation Army and Operation Blessing, totaling more than $6 million.
And how large is your organization?
We have a cadre of core volunteers that encompasses about 56 people. Administratively, it's my husband and I. We have a board of directors that is 6 people, and we have no paid employees.
And how did you end up in the Dominican Republic? Were you there when the quake hit?
No, we've worked here for 12 years, and we do annual programs here for women's health, pap smears, blood pressure, et cetera. But we have a very good friend here, Dr. Mark Bernard, who has a clinic that we use as a surgical center. And the patients began arriving on his doorstep at the border on Thursday morning, the quake happening on Tuesday, and he called us saying he was overwhelmed. By the time we were on the ground on Friday, there were 417 people. Their families then brought that number up to 1,800 people on the ground in various states of misery, terrible trauma. And of those 417, we've had 10 fatalities. And we've had a great number of amputations, and we'll continue to have as some of the limb salvaging efforts have failed. We're about to receive 18 more patients today from Haiti.
Has the workload eased at all?
It has eased somewhat in that the surgery schedule is now manageable, and we can plan the surgery schedule every day. Of course, having allowance for emergencies, but the care is now we're past the emergency stage. We've gone into the chronic hospital stage now. And when Dr. Kagan and his wife Patty were down here, they led us into that stage. Patty is one of the most astute nurses and educators that you would ever want to meet, and she quickly took the nursing staff and led them into the next phase of care.
How many folks do you have there working now?
Right now, on site, we have 217 volunteers.
Wow.
Not all of them are medical. They're doing many things, part of them leaving here every day and going into Haiti and just coming back to spend the night.
Dr. Kagan, what was it like when you left? What's your appraisal of the situation at this point?
Well, we left last Saturday, so Friday was really the last day I was on site. And over the course of the week that we were there, there was a sense of a decrescendo in terms of how acute things were, how chaotic things were, how overall busy we were. But there were still many patients in need with medical needs beyond our ability to do the definitive care they needed, so we were still urgently trying to get them transported to other facilities. You know, there were helicopters coming in all week long, but their arrivals were often at random times. I discovered or learned a couple days after I got back that apparently some sort of logjam had been broken through, and a couple of Black Hawk helicopters came in, I guess, on Sunday and got virtually all of the critically ill people out to other facilities. And by critically ill, I mean patients who had been lying for days with spinal cord injuries, paraplegics. There was one gentleman who had a cervical neck cord injury. These people were evacuated out. We had a number of seriously ill and injured children that needed to get out as well. And so my understanding is, Dorothy, that those folks have moved on to other places. Left behind were still many patients, scores of patients, who had serious fractures of limbs that had temporizing stabilization done, external fixations. Those people would all need to get further stabilization, orthopedic surgeries as well. There's a lot of work left undone.
If you're just joining us, we're talking, of course, about Haiti. My guests, Dr. Lee Kagan, that's who was just speaking. He's an internal medicine physician. He's calling us from California right now. And also Dorothy Davison. She is the director of International Medical Alliance. That's where that's what Dr. Kagan works through. And joining me in the studio today, Randy Cohen. She is a Columbus mental health counselor and a translator as well. Randy, tell us about your work and what you plan on doing when you travel to Haiti next week.
Well, what I'm assuming I'm going to continue to do is we work with International Medical Alliance works with the Mayo Clinic, and they bring in medical students annually to work with the poor on the frontier. And I'm Dorothy. I haven't even talked with Dorothy about this, but I'm assuming that the students are also going to continue to go into the villages and work with the physicians and treat the people that International Medical Alliance typically treats as well for whatever medical needs they need annually. And what I do is I just go as an interpreter and speak Spanish or Dominican and work with the physicians and the patients and help them communicate better. I also schlep. I do whatever I can do to stay out of the way and help move things forward.
If you want to know more about the International Medical Alliance, go to imaonline.org. That'll give you what you need. Also, if you go to wosu.org/allsides, you can see some photographs of Randy at work with IMA and also Dr. Kagan and his wife, Patty. I'm wondering, Randy, if your background in counseling has helped you as well.
Well, I think this time it's going to come in a lot more handy than it does than it did in the past. I think that there's going to be a lot of first responder folks who, you know, ideally may want to do some talking and just process, debrief a little bit. I have been trained in critical incident stress debriefing, so I'm hoping that that skill, that training will serve me there. And if we don't do anything formal, I'm there, you know, for a week or so. So whatever anybody needs, I'm going to be available.
You know, Dorothy, when these kind of things happen back here in the States, it's easy to see this as like a two-dimensional problem, sort of like stick figures out there, whether it's the tsunami or an earthquake or, you know, a surge from a hurricane. It doesn't really seem real. And I was wondering if you could kind of give us a sense about what it's really like, what it feels like being there and how are people responding emotionally?
In we are going to need Randy. I've had surgeons in tears. I've had surgeons beating on the wall as people have chosen one woman not to have both of her legs and an arm amputated. She would die, and she did. We have people seeing this human misery and unable to cope with it, and yet we see a resilience in our patients that gives us great hope. We delivered twins 3 days ago. We delivered another baby yesterday. We've now had 5 births here. That's certainly hope for the future. We had some part of Mother Teresa's group that's in Port-au-Prince drove over to tell us of a group of nuns in Lakai who had had no medical response. We sent helicopters. We've got doctors up there now caring for burn patients that had received no care in the first 15 to 16 days after the event.
It's kind of inconceivable. Now, your operation is located in the Dominican Republic at the border with Haiti, right?
Right. We're on the border in Jimani. This clinic was built to serve as an outpatient surgical center for cataract surgery, GYN, and clubfoot repair. It is now functioning with 5 OR suites, and we are really amazed at how this has come together and how creative and resourceful our surgeons and staff. It's amazing. Every day that you see it, you just cannot help but marvel.
Being on the border, has that been an advantage or a disadvantage? Or what's the pose any particular obstacles for you?
No, it's very much an advantage. The Dominican public health people have been so helpful. CESPAS, that's S-E-S-P-A-S, has come in. And they could foresee that we would have a measles outbreak. So they gave all of the children vitamin A, which does help mitigate the effects of measles. They knew that we were going to have a sickness outbreak, and they brought in the immune globulin, and they saw to it that our patients had it. They bring in oversight and structure that we need, and they've worked with us very closely, and it indeed has improved our ability to deliver care because we have true hospital function here with administrative oversight.
Could you explain to me, SES PASS? SES PAS?
SES, and I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it is the Public Health Service of the Dominican Republic.
Oh, okay. All right. Great. We're going to have to take a quick break. In the meantime, if you have any questions for these folks, Randy Cohen, she's from Columbus. She's a mental health counselor and a translator for International Medical Alliance, and also from Haiti, the director of International Medical Alliance, Dorothy Davison, and Dr. Lee Kagan is calling us from California. He's on his way to Haiti or to return to Haiti next week. They've been there. They can tell you all about it if you want to know. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is Neil Conan. If you're a real political junkie like Ken Rudin, then you're torn between parsing the returns from the Illinois primary and keeping your eyes on Capitol Hill, where budget equals destiny. Ken joins guest host Rebecca Roberts, plus 6-word memoirs are back. Ken's memoir, Too Long Since Last Trivia Question. That's the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins this afternoon at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. 34 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies today in a high of 35, clouds tonight in a low of 20, some sunshine for Thursday and a high of 38.
Support for WOSU comes from Integrate, helping to improve business performance through brand design and marketing communications for more than 20 years. On the web at integrateinc.com or at 614-421-0004.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you want to talk about Haiti and hear from some of the medical professionals that are working there to save lives, call 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining me in the studio, Randy Cohen. She's a mental health counselor in Columbus, but she also speaks Spanish. And in that capacity, or in both capacities, she will be traveling to Haiti next week to work with the International Medical Alliance. And on the phone from Haiti, Dorothy Davison, you're the director. And also Dr. Lee Kagan, he's a physician in California in internal medicine. Dr. Kagan, it's right that you don't get paid for this. You pay your own way to do the travel for this. Where's your day job, such as it is?
I'm an internist in suburban Los Angeles. I have an outpatient practice, but I got involved with the International Medical Alliance back when Katrina hit. My wife and I felt compelled to help out. My parents are Holocaust survivors, and when Katrina hit, I felt my wife and I both felt we owed something back to the country that had taken in my parents, and we met Dale and her husband, Dale and Dorothy, and just fell in love with them and the work they were doing, and continued to work at the clinic in New Orleans, and then later made the annual trips with them down to Haiti. But the practice I do is sort of traditional medical practice. We have received tremendous support from our friends and others, including financial support, to help us get back and forth.
That's right. International Medical Alliance, no one's paid at all, and everyone pays their own way. And then Randy mentioned it, you also bring your own medicine.
That's right. Dorothy can probably speak to this a little bit more than I can, but the organization purchases at discount from a variety of sources and also receives donations of pharmaceuticals. And in order for us to get it into the country on our into the Dominican Republic on our annual trips, we divide it up so that everyone brings a 50-pound duffel as part of their luggage of supplies. And when we come in, we have better than or close to a ton of pharmaceuticals and other supplies that we bring with us.
If you want to contribute to International Medical Alliance, you can go to their website, imaonline.org, or you can go to wosu.org/allsides. We'll have a link there for you if that's something you're interested in. And while you're there, you can look at some photographs of Randy at work with, I think, Dr. Kagan as well. And I think there's some pictures of Dorothy, too. And there's also a link to some photographs that Patty Kagan sent to us. And there's a whole bunch of pictures in that. And it gives us a really good idea visually. But, Dr. Kagan, I wanted to talk a little bit more about that emotional aspect, and what it's like for the medical professionals used to working in places like suburban Los Angeles. And then you have some experience doing this kind of catastrophic medicine. But what's it been like for you?
Well, this trip is probably the most acute in terms of arriving so early after the event. The feeling is really overwhelming when you first get there, and in a way you sort of just hunker down and do your job. But at the end of the day, you're standing on the veranda taking a little break, and for some reason, you really can't put your finger on. You're kind of on the verge of tears, mm-hmm. and a lot of people that I spoke with had experiences like that, where they just at some point needed to have their cry. People pretty much are able to function and just focus on their jobs. In terms of the medical expectations, it's obviously very different than what one would expect here. The resources we have there are very limited. We didn't even get X-ray in place until the day before I left, which would be last Thursday. So that means you had orthopedists doing surgery, resetting and stabilizing fractures without the benefit of exercise, without the benefit of X-ray. They were basically going by feel. You have to, as Dorothy said, use a lot of ingenuity and kind of wing it.
Dorothy, what sort of when I read in the Columbus Dispatch today, it said that Haiti, a lot of what the story was focused on was on the chaos, the bottlenecks, the violence. But the New York Times reported this morning that the chaos is easing and that things are kind of sorting out. As Dr. Kagan mentioned, what's your sense about that as far as what's going on in Port-au-Prince? Does any of that affect you?
Only in that now we're beginning to receive some of the complex cases that need our radiographic and surgical expertise. It also allows us now to begin to send more supplies forward that have come this far and needed to be secured and taken across the border. The American Refugee Committee has come in beside us, and right inside of Haiti, they have set up a wonderful refugee camp. But our people are scared when it's time to be transferred. They are afraid of the unknown, so we've been taking pictures and showing them what a wonderful place this is, because they will be spending a very long time there. Port-au-Prince is, from the pictures I've seen, and I haven't traveled, is in total ruin.
Now, where are you sending them again? Is it to the Dominican Republic or the United States?
No, it's in Haiti.
Haiti,
it's
okay.
Right across the border,
okay,
near a town called Fonda Parisian. The American Refugee Committee has set up a refugee camp so that the families and the stable patients are now repatriated into their country.
And I was wondering, a lot of folks are being sent to U.S. hospitals from Haiti.
I have heard that. It hasn't been my experience that we personally have seen that. We do have a burn patient who's now being cared for in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. We're very grateful for that. Dr. Carol Ritter from Baltimore was able to take a patient back there for cesarean delivery, and she delivered yesterday safely, a baby boy. But most of our transfers have actually been to the USS Comfort or to the air base, where they have triaged them and sent them to various hospitals that could handle our spinal cord injury.
If you have questions for Dorothy Davison, Director of International Medical Alliance, or Dr. Lee Kagan calling us from California before he sets off again for Haiti to work on behalf of International Medical Alliance, or Randy Cohen, she's a Columbus mental health counselor and also a Spanish translator. She's going to be heading to Haiti with the International Medical Alliance next week. If you have any questions, you can call us at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dorothy, we have an email from Kelly. She asks, while those assisting need to remain healthy themselves, I am wondering if your guest in Haiti has experienced survivor's guilt relative to the fact that she likely isn't wanting for food and serviceable shelter. How does that work, Dorothy?
I have not personally seen a great deal of that. I think early on we saw it, and now that we're able to provide a more traditional hospital setting for our patients, gears seem to be shifting to patient-focused care. Early on, there was a terrible sense of survival guilt. You looked at these poor people and you thought, how much more can Haiti take? I put two children in their coffins and took their pictures to forward to the UN so that if someday their parents ever seek to find what happened to them, they can be identified by the pictures. I had bags of amputated limbs lining our lobby waiting for them to be taken away. The first few days were overwhelming.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. We're talking about Haiti, as you probably have figured out by now. My guests are all from International Medical Alliance. You can go to their website if you want to know more. It's on at wosu.org/allsides, or you can go directly imaonline.org if you want to make some contributions, too. As far as the children go, what tends to be the injuries and ailments that you're seeing with the kids right now? Dr. Kagan?
Primarily, go ahead, Lee.
Well, Dorothy, you're there now, so why don't you describe?
Yeah, that's true.
It's primarily orthopedic. It continues to be orthopedic injuries. We have a few children with amputations, but most with, fortunately, just fractures. And children heal very fast, so we're very helpful for these children.
I would add, I'm not an orthopedist, patients immobilized by these injuries and their treatments are at risk for a variety of medical complications. And the non-orthopedic physicians that I worked with spent a lot of time trying to prevent things like blood clots and pneumonia and other infections. So there was a huge amount of work for the non-orthopedists as well.
It's really kind of amazing if you go to a typical physician's office here or a hospital, when you compare it to what's going on in Haiti, it's sort of shocking how many people are surviving in a way, because you feel like you're in a hermetically sealed bag when you walk into a hospital these days. What are the greatest challenges at this point, Dorothy? What do you need the most?
Actually, it's going to be, first and foremost, it will be cash to go forward to turn this into not only a surgical center, but now it will become a rehabilitation center with prosthetics and plastic surgery. And beyond that, it's hope for the people. This hospital, Le Bon Samaritan, will continue to be here, but Haiti must be rebuilt. These people need hope. Without hope, I've carried around an artificial leg with me going patient to patient for the past 2 days and showed these people the legs and what they can expect. And this is after a man told me 4 days ago through a translator that when you had your legs taken off in Haiti, you became a beggar on the street. And I told him no. So we brought out a leg. And now we have questions like, can I play soccer again? Can I kick a ball? The socket on that leg that you have is above the knee. Does this mean I have to have more of my leg cut off? Will they give them to poor people like us? Who will teach us to use them? But it focuses them on the future. And that's what they need, is hope.
There have been reports about kind of a gender stratification among people, that you have to make sure that the women are taken care of because they tend to be pushed aside if they aren't targeted by the relief groups. Is there, been an issue with any kind of that kind of class shaking out different class differences?
No, we haven't seen that here. We certainly are identifying our women with children as a vulnerable population. We're extremely careful with our children. They are children, if they do not have an adult with them, they are children of undetermined status. We term no child an orphan because orphan means that there are not only not parents, but there are not aunts, uncles, grandparents, brothers, and sisters. We're very careful with our children. UNICEF is helping us with our oversight. As vulnerable mothers leave, they go to a place here in Jimani on the Dominican side called the Nutrition Center, where they're kept, where we're sure that the mothers and the infants and young children receive adequate nutrition care. We have psychologists working there with the children. And when I say we, it's not us. It's the Dominican government and the UNICEF. So the children are identified.
You mentioned what a great job the Dominican Public Health Department is doing, but this has to be an incredible pressure on them. I mean, it's just a small little country, too. It's only a little bit wealthier or less poor than Haiti.
It is, and especially on the frontier. We've worked for years with Rafael Piguero, who is the president of INDESUR, which is the Foundation for Development of the Frontier, and he has poured incredible resources into our efforts, as had all of the Dominican health system. And we've been sending critical patients to Santo Domingo since day one. And their health system was so saturated by the critical patients that they couldn't even care for their own trauma population and the everyday motorbike automobile accidents. It's an island-wide emergency. It's not just a Haiti emergency.
You know, they talk about what a big problem they're having getting flights into Haiti. Is it the same? Have you experienced similar problems in the Dominican Republic?
No, we've been able to get our flights into Santo Domingo and get our people brought across quite easily. We have infrastructure here, though, and that really gives us a great plus, because we have housing, we have transportation. We have people who have taken care of our volunteers for years. We typically bring in 50 at a time, not 200, but it's stretched.
Dorothy, I know you're going to be leaving us in a few minutes. I wondered if there's anything else you want to say that I haven't asked about to tell our listeners.
I can't think of it. I've talked so much over the past 3 weeks that I'm losing my voice.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I want to save the power on your cell phone now. So you want to say goodbye to your colleagues, and thanks again for your help today. Bye, Dorothy. We'll see you next week.
Bye, Dorothy. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye, Lee. And Pat, Randy?
Yes,
we
ma'am.
We need you on the ground. We need you here.
I'll see you next week.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Good night. Thank you.
Thanks again, Dorothy. That was Dorothy Davison. She's the director of International Medical Alliance. That is one of the groups, one of the non-governmental organizations that are on the island. They happen to be at the border of the Dominican Republic and Haiti, working to help save people's lives and eventually help them with the rehabilitation and prosthetics. Randy, how do you prepare to go on a trip like this?
I'm not sure people do. I mean, how do I personally prepare? I keep going over my critical incident stress debriefing notes that I use. And I've been in contact with Lee and Patty, and they were great with Twittering every few hours, actually, updates since they got there. And that's been very helpful for me to be able to follow along and communicate. And Dorothy has emailed me back and forth several times. So I'm just trying to stay cognizant of what's going on and just try to be aware. I'm not sure there's any real preparation other than that.
Dr. Kagan, do you welcome other people to follow you on Twitter?
We do. I have a Facebook page. Let me just preface this by saying I'm not all that computer savvy. I depend on my adult children to keep me afloat in that world.
We do what we can.
Right. I had not had a Twitter account until right before we left to go, but they've set it up so that it does post to my Facebook page, and I don't know who can see it or not at this point.
Okay, we'll check that out. Your Facebook page is just Lee Kagan on Facebook?
Lee Kagan, right.
Okay. We're going to have to take a short break, and Dr. Kagan, you will be leaving us. Thanks so much for taking the time to get up so early in the morning in California and spend the little bit of free time you have left before you return to Haiti with us.
My pleasure, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to let people know about the work that the IMA is doing.
You bet. That was Dr. Lee Kagan. He is an internal medicine physician from a suburb of Los Angeles. He is also working with International Medical Alliance. If you want to know more about that, go to WOSU.org/allsides, and you can go to their link and you can see pictures. Randy Cohen is going to stay with us for the rest of the hour, and we're going to start talking about some orphanages and some other issues in Haiti and the issues of orphans. If you have any questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media and State Auto Insurance present Columbus Neighborhoods Share Your Story Day on Saturday, March 6th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Sherry Gallery in the Short North. WOSU is collecting your photos and treasured memories of life in the Short North for an online community project and TV documentary. Call 292-9678 to participate or visit WOSU.org for more information.
And good morning. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. And in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here. We'll hear two points of view about federal funding for the 3C passenger rail plan for Ohio. That discussion begins at 11 right here on WOSU 820. 34 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies today, and a high right around 35. A few clouds tonight and a low of 20 degrees, some sunshine for Thursday and a high of 38. And looking ahead to Friday, you can expect a rain-snow mix on Friday and a high of 35 degrees.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com. This is WOSU, NPR News and Classical Music.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the latest developments in Haiti as we know them from the ground. We were just talking with the director of the International Medical Alliance, Dorothy Davison, and also Dr. Lee Kagan. He's a physician, one of the volunteer physicians that is working with the IMA. And in the studio today, Randy Cohen. She is another volunteer for IMA. IMA is all volunteer organization. There are no wages paid. Everybody is all volunteer, and they pay their own way to get there and bring their own medicine, too. If you want to make some contributions, or Randy, why don't you tell us about, you know, what IMA needs at this point and how it works?
Well, I think basically what they mostly need right now is cash, which that's what everybody is saying. 100% of anything that's donated goes directly towards the treatment, medicines, instruments. There are no wages paid. We don't use that for our bus fare to get to and from the airport or anything like that. We all pay our own ways. The cash is used right now to buy water. They need water. They need food. They need medicine. In fact, when I go down next week, I've been packing my suitcase and struggling. I bought, foolishly, a bunch of children's books that are in Spanish. And I bought 70 pounds of them, so I'm trying to figure out how to pack 70 pounds.
Yeah, but you say foolishly. I guess it's the poundage is the issue. Yeah, but emotionally, right. Books would be as...
Yeah, they're little kids' books. And there are no books in Creole that I have found in Columbus, Ohio. So, and I couldn't find any in French. So I bought a bunch in Spanish because they're right now, since we're on the Dominican side, at least a lot of the care is going to be with some Spanish speakers. And so, yeah, anything people want to donate. But right now, I think that the cash is the biggest piece that they can, that IMA can take and use to go directly for whatever it needs at this point.
We're going to turn to the issue of orphanages. I just have one more question. When you go there, Randy, where will you stay?
Actually, I don't know. Okay. Typically, we stay. There's a senator who we've been connected up with who has loaned us rooms in his house. But I've packed an air mattress because I may be sleeping in a warehouse someplace or in a tent. I don't know.
Okay. Thanks again for being with us, Randy.
You're welcome.
And
Thank you.
Hang around. You're welcome. Right now, we're going to turn to a story about Christian Services International Ministries and their effort to bring 20 orphans back to the States. Joining us on the phone is John Clark. He's the director of Haiti Missions for Christian Services International. John, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Can you tell us what is happening in your particular case, not to be confused with the group that has been arrested there involving the 20 orphans that they were trying to get out of Haiti. This is a completely different group, and it's not about adoption. So why don't you go ahead, John, and tell us what your deal is.
Sure. I'll give you a little background. Our orphanage is called Hope, and it was, I don't know if you want to call it a social experiment, but it's certainly a ministry. We adopted 20 girls. Tried when we adopted them to get them between the ages of 2 and 5 each when we at the time of adoption, and it's limited to just to 20 girls. That's all we have. It's all we want. It's not an orphanage where you can drop kids off or pick them up. All 20 of those girls were screened prior to acceptance into our orphanage, and the goal is to raise them in a Christian family environment. They're being raised as sisters. We've got a missionary couple down there from Mansfield, Ohio, that have dedicated many, many years of their life to serve basically as house parents. They will serve them all the way through until high school graduation. The girls are being educated. They're being raised trilingually, French, Creole, and in English. And at the time of the earthquake, you know, obviously the orphanage suffered a lot of damage. And the question was, what can we do with these 20 girls? What should we do with these 20 girls to provide a nice, safe place for them to be? They immediately went to the American embassy and tried to get out of the country on humanitarian parole. Now, humanitarian parole, I'm sure you all are aware of now, was granted for any orphans that were adoptable or already in the adoption process. So we went to the humanitarian parole, and the girls were on their way to the airport when they were told that the humanitarian parole had been revoked. This is Wednesday now, following the earthquake. And it was revoked on the grounds that our girls were not adoptable. They are certified orphans from the Haitian government. We've got paperwork from the Haitian government saying such. But since they were not adoptable, they were not granted humanitarian parole, and were basically stuck in Haiti.
Now, go ahead. Well, I wanted to understand clearly what your relationship is with the girls, that you've legally adopted them, but they're not adoptable. They live like children in an orphanage, such as it is. I mean, it's hard to imagine. You know, I don't want to generalize about what that is, but you won't adopt them out. They'll never live with a family.
They are living with a family now, and those 20 girls are being raised as sisters. And the house parents that we have there are basically serving as their parents. They are not adopted. CSI Ministries are the legal custodians of the girls, but we did not adopt them. But they are in our custody.
Mm-hmm. So, and the issue is that this case has fallen through the cracks. It doesn't fit any of the circumstances that the United States is permitting people to leave Haiti for.
Correct. If Tim and Toby Banks, who are the missionaries serving at the Hope Orphanage, if Tim and Toby Banks had adopted them previously, all 20 girls, it wouldn't have been a problem to bring them home. If they were up for adoption and we were trying to adopt them out in the United States, it would not have been a problem to send them to the United States. The issue we have is, you know, we have orphans. They're legally declared orphans. They're in our custody. But the United States would not let us come to the United States with those under those conditions. They did not qualify for the humanitarian parole. So it's one of those unique cases that just basically, like you said, fell through the cracks.
And you want to bring them to Mansfield to live?
Well, ideally, we'd probably bring them to Ohio. There's a lot of support in the Cincinnati, Columbus, Mansfield areas. We've got a lot of supporters throughout Ohio for CSI Ministries and for the Hope Orphanage. There were places offered in Mansfield, near Mansfield, to say, hey, we will take the 20 girls for a while. The other unique thing is, you know, we don't want to bring the girls to the States to become United States citizens. Our goal is to change Haiti from the inside out, that these 20 girls can get a good education and become female leaders and role models in Haiti, which, you know, right now, unfortunately, the way they're set up is kind of hard to find. Girls have a really rough time, especially orphan girls, ever finding a great place in society. So we're trying to change Haiti from the inside out. If we would bring the girls to the United States and make them permanent citizens, well, that defeats the purpose of our ministry. So we do want to send them back to Haiti. We do want them to be raised in Haiti. But for the time being, while the orphanage gets rebuilt, it would be a blessing if we could have them in Mansfield at least for, you know, a six-month period.
You know, the issue of getting orphans out of Haiti has jumped to the forefront recently with the arrest of the 10 missionaries, I think, from Idaho or Iowa. I'm looking for that story right now. But I was wondering, they were trying to get them out of Haiti. They didn't have the proper papers. Haitians are understandably, as any country would be or any place would be, when there's such catastrophe, they're worried about children being stolen. And I was wondering what impact, if any, this latest development with this group that's been arrested has had on your efforts.
You know, I've got to be completely honest. I've not followed the story at all. Be truthful. You know, we're doing what we can with our girls and our ministries right now and taking care of our people. But anytime you would have a story that would, you know, have a negatively impact the ability to adopt, that's just going to hurt our case all the more. You know, I don't know the details behind it. I don't know if what the situation was, but I do know it's getting a lot of international attention. And my guess is that means that Haiti will even, you know, tighten up the procedure to get orphans out of the country.
Right, which would make it more difficult.
That would be my assumption, but I don't know that. Again, the unique case about us is we have paperwork on all of them. Mm-hmm. So it's not an issue of whether these kids are orphaned or not. It's just an issue of, you know, how exactly do they qualify for to get visas to transport to the United States? I mean, what under what grounds can we get them out? And
so,
right now we're finding that we're at very few grounds.
How high do you have to go? I mean, what are your options at this point?
I would think that either the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, would have to intervene, or, Department of Homeland Security. We have to go basically to the top, since things don't really fit right where the rules are right now. you know, I still think since they are in our custody that we should be able to get them out under humanitarian parole. That would be my contention. But the government, unfortunately, doesn't see it that way.
Now, these are orphans in the sense that they don't have parents, or do they have parents that gave up their custody?
They are either in the case of A, they don't have parents, or B, they have been legally abandoned by their parents. There's an awful lot of quote-unquote orphans in Haiti that still have parents. They are just, you know, parents can't afford to take care of them, so they drop them off at the local orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, you know, those parents show up to visit their child. It's you know, I don't want to. It's more like an extended daycare or residential care in some cases. Mm-hmm. In the case of our girls, you know, we had parents come by. They went to, you know, did file the proper paperwork. We want nothing more to do with this child. Can't afford them. Don't want to take care of them. Here you go. They are now in your custody permanently. And our 20 girls only know our house parents as quote unquote parents.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jonathan, you're on the air. You wanted to talk about press coverage of this?
My question is two questions, actually. How much do you think the proximity to Haiti from Haiti to the United States increases the amount of aid that the Americans give? And secondly, there's been an awful lot of press coverage of this compared to, as example, other earthquakes in other parts of the world.
You think?
I think a lot more people died in China a couple of years ago, and I don't remember hearing anywhere near as much about it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't measured the amount of time, but you know, off the top of my head, I might venture a guess, Jonathan, and that's all it would be, is it would be that China is, a relatively wealthy country with a relatively stable infrastructure and governmental organizations that reach down into these places and was in better shape to take care of itself than Haiti has been.
May be the case in the China example is perhaps not such a great example, but there was the earthquake in Jakarta or the tsunami earthquake in Jakarta 3 years ago.
Well, of course, one of the problems there is that it's controlled by a government that doesn't allow anybody in to help. Okay, so give me another example.
Unfortunately, I'm not so well read on.
Well, that's okay. You know, I'm interested in your impressions, though, and you did ask the question about proximity. Randy Cohen, what do you think about the sense of proximity to Haiti and what that means to aid to that country?
Well, I'm certainly not an expert at all. I'm thinking
maybe
though,
on an emotional level.
Yeah, on an emotional level, that it is close. And we do have ongoing relations. We've had on and off again giving money to Haiti. We poured a lot of money into Haiti over the years. A lot of folks from the U.S. Actually go on vacations to the Dominican Republic. We use these places in a big way.
Well, I would like to see something like a proximal gifting type thing. The closer they are, the more, you know, aid generally, that type of thing. But it does occur to me, this earthquake occurred a considerable time ago.
3 weeks.
And it is still top news.
Well, it's not top news in the Dispatch anymore. It was inside the paper today.
Oh,
yeah.
Making it inside.
Yeah, you know. What can I say?
The other thing, though, I think, though, is that I think people do, once we are close, and we did. We were inundated. This is all we heard about. And I do think that people do want to help. I mean, I got scores of emails from people I didn't even know that said, tell me how to help. What can I do? Should I go down there?
Well, do you think you've gotten, and you're more specifically connected to Haiti, but do you think that those letters occurred more with more likelihood because America is only, you know, a couple hundred miles from Haiti, but we're thousands and thousands of miles away from other earthquakes?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. John Clark, Director of Haiti Missions for the Christian Services International, what do you make of that kind of the American sense of connection to Haiti?
Well, I think I think he's right that in terms of proximity, that's certainly a benefit. And, we do have, CSI Ministries, we've got missions all over the place. You know, we go to Belize, we go to Dominican Republic, we go to Jamaica. And since so many Americans over time, an awful high percentage, they've traveled, more have traveled to Haiti and Dominican Republic than they have in China. And so since that's the case, they've been back to the United States. They've been able to tell the plight of Haiti. They've been able to tell the plight of the Dominican Republic. And I think that has inspired a lot of the giving. The other thing to consider is, I went down there the day after the earthquake. It is literally a war zone. You've got 2 million people living in a community that was maybe geographically the size for 50,000 to 100,000. And so the disaster is phenomenal. I know we had tsunamis. I know we've had all kinds of global, natural disasters. But to have this big of a disaster in this small of an area, it is certainly bringing out the best in people that I've witnessed.
Have you been down there, John?
I flew down there the day after the earthquake. Initially we had no contact with our missionaries. We didn't know if they were alive. We didn't know, what the situation were it was. Mm-hmm. We've got 8 full-time missionaries on the ground, an orphanage, a healthcare clinic, and a mission house. And so the very next day I set off to fly down there just so I could, touch base with them, make sure they were okay. We sent satellite phones down, some medicines for our clinic. Took some cash down because we figured cash would be king in that sort of environment. And just to check on them, make sure they were okay. So I got there. All of our missionaries at CSI Ministries did make it, no problem. We employ about 60 Haitian staff for our ministries. A lot of the staff, even though they survived, most of them lost homes, and several of them lost children in the process.
Jonathan, did any of this help you?
Yes, it did. I'd like to close with a comment and a short question, and I'm going to hang up.
Quick comment, quick question.
Yes.
We just have a minute left on the show, so. How about a quick comment?
No, actually, I'm just going to hang up. Thanks a lot, Ann.
Thanks for calling, Jonathan. We appreciate it. We have run out of time. I just want to say thanks to my guests in the studio, Randy Cohen. She's a mental health counselor in Columbus. She's also a Spanish translator, and she is headed to Haiti with International Medical Alliance. If you want to know more about that organization, you can go to WOSU.org/allsides and see some pictures as well. Thank you, Randy, for being here.
Thank you, Ann.
And then on the phone, John Clark. He's the Haiti Missions Director for Christian Services International. John, is there an address for you in the...
Yes, csiministries.org. Please go there and take a look at our ministries that we're going on in Haiti. We're posting regular updates so you can follow the plight of the girls and everybody else in Haiti right now.
All righty. And this has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.